What's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of Healthspan Academy. I'm your host, Craig Shearhart, and joining me today is my special guest, Dr. Patty Galvin, who's a sports doctor. She's worked with a number of high athletes over the years. She spent some time working with the Guelph football and hockey varsity teams. Originally, her academic career started with a Bachelor of Science in Kinesiology from University of Waterloo, then went on to complete a Master's in Kinesiology from University of Waterloo, and then got a Doctor of Medicine from McMaster University in Hamilton. And since then, she's worked, as I said, with some high-level athletes. She's been team doctor for the Guelph Storm, a semi-professional team, a hockey team here in Guelph, and 4 years as team doctor of the National Canadian Women's Hockey Team. And she's been a physician with Wellington Ortho and Rehab, a local clinic here where she spends most of her time. She's also an adjunct assistant clinical professor in medicine at McMaster University. Patty, thanks for joining me today.
No, my pleasure, Greg. Thank you.
Awesome. Let's start with this conversation with how you got involved with sports medicine originally. You obviously had an interest in kinesiology and sports growing up. When did you always have an interest in getting into medicine and rehab pieces?
Well, again, I was really active as a kid. We had an active family. Mm-hmm. And when I came into kinesiology, I think just that amalgamation of science and, activity, I thought, exercise as medicine was a real big, push even, in my early training.
Yeah.
And so I really had a big interest in medicine, and I just didn't feel I was going to be a traditional family, physician.
Right.
And so when I had mentors or opportunity to try sports medicine electives, it just, it was the right avenue for me. So, Fair enough.
Awesome. Cool. So let's talk about, you've seen a wide range of sports, a lot of contact sports. Talk about some of the more common injuries that you would see with athletes come into your clinic over the years and then recently.
Yes. Certainly there was a lot of, concussion injuries with, high risk sports with hockey and football, a lot of fractures through the years. I find now I deal a lot with knees, a lot with shoulders, and a lot with lower extremity, foot and ankle. For lower extremity biomechanics and dealing with certainly our large group of running, runners in this city as well.
Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to hear your take. So the training methods have also evolved over the years. And I'm curious to see if that's caused the shift in the type of injuries that you see. Has that led to more kind of knee issues, less fractures? There's been a shift as the technology and the training has changed over the years.
I think that, overtraining certainly can lead to, more injuries, especially right. Lower limb. If people are really doing heavy weight training, then certain back, iliac joint, and pelvic injuries I see a lot of as well.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of wrist injuries and upper extremity injuries with people doing more high-intensity interval training.
Right.
And pushing harder with weight training as well.
Yeah.
In preparation for those sports.
Yeah. I guess the rise of weightlifting as a training modality, I guess, for these athletes is cause like, it's a great method for improving power, but if you don't have the mobility or the technique, you could open up for tons of wrist stuff and shoulder stuff for sure. Yeah. Let's talk about the impact of the pandemic. And this has obviously impacted the entire world, athletes included. Have you seen a shift in what you've seen from high level athletes? Have there been more stress related issues, stuff that we can kind of trace back to, stuff that might be just extra tension resonating the traps or that kind of stuff? Or have you connected those dots at all?
I think that, certainly there's been a lot more mood disorders. People have felt very isolated with their training, maybe didn't have access to medical care as quickly as possible during the pandemic. And so interfered with their training and interfered with their, their schedule of when they were going to be participating in various events, whether it's the worlds or whatever. So mood disorders really were very prevalent, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then people with improper training methods, especially if they were left to their own devices.
Yeah.
And if you're very fortunate if you were dealing with, Guelph Storm or even, the varsity men's soccer or probably the varsity men's football or the women's hockey team, they'd have very well laid out conditioning programs for you, but you may not have had the access to your strength and conditioning coach, to be able to modify, and it's hard to do by video all the time.
Yeah. And I guess those lines have been blurred a little bit with like who's considered pro athletes and who was able to still train, I think varsity athletes were considered, I think it depended on the sport, but A lot of them were just stuck training at home by like everybody else, which is obviously exactly. frustrating when that's like a huge part of your life. Yeah. Let's talk about some of the treatments or recommendations you make for some of your athletes. So I know visco supplementation has kind of flown in and out over the years. I know there's a spike earlier and it's been used for quite a while, but I feel like it's picking up a little bit of steam. Do you often recommend that for some of the injuries that you see with your athletes?
I do for athletes really of all ages, but visco supplementation is used with particularly mild to moderate osteoarthritis. Mm-hmm. I see it a lot in runners, certainly people who have become walkers through the years. The football players certainly use it a lot as well for patellofemoral syndrome, low grade meniscal tears, mm-hmm. and for instance with osteoarthritis, the average age presenting physicians is about 58.
Right.
People are still very active, and if anything, as they retire, they become more active than they've ever been. Mm-hmm. And so it's a good intervention to fill the gap for people that don't want to use medication management, that have maybe failed physiotherapy methods, and that they're not surgical candidates yet for visco supplementation injections are like a lubricant.
Right.
Put it right in the knee to do shock absorbency and protect the knee.
Yeah.
And certainly fills a gap and can delay surgeries, upwards of 7.2 years according to some of the literature. So it has a lot to offer. It has a lot to offer.
That's awesome. And I assume like other sort of similar types, like we talk about like stem cell or what have you, that's sort of still developing. At this point, really, if you have arthritis, we're just talking about delaying surgery and joint replacement. Is that, do you feel like we're still a ways away from getting beyond that?
Yes, I would have to agree. I mean, we're trying to, once you have surgery, there's no going back.
Yeah.
So you want to exhaust every option that's available to people that's within, their financial, ability or which is appropriate for the patient. And
right.
so we look at exercise, we look at, weight loss, we look at nutrition. All of that is addressed, as part and parcel. And if visco supplementation, fills a gap, great. The PRP, again, there's more research to be, studied, but it does have indication for partial rotator cuff tears, for lateral epicondylitis, for knee osteoarthritis, patellar tendonitis, or some of the areas that, we have some evidence to be able to support use of. Thereafter, it's used off-label, and there's really not much evidence.
Yeah.
Stem cell, again, has been discontinued in Canada over the past 2 years. Too many people are using it off-label. You can still get access to it in many large centers and even smaller centers in the United States for osteoarthritis and for cartilage issues.
And is that... Do you know much of why the regulatory reasons behind that? Is it lack of definitive evidence? Is it funding? Is it I feel like it's still being used in other cultures. What is the reasoning behind it being pulled from Canada?
Because with stem cell, even with PRP, it's very heterogeneous. Mm-hmm. So you can use different sources, whether you're using bone marrow aspirate, whether you're using adipose tissue, whether you're using amniotic source. And so various clinics are using different sources, so it's hard to compare one clinic to another in terms of outcomes.
Right.
And I think those things are hard to standardize until
you
have more standardized protocols in more clinics.
Right.
It was also being used off-label, the Canadian government just stepped in and said, no more use of this at the present time.
Fair enough. Yeah, hopefully... Yeah. It is an exciting area, and I feel like there's still a lot of potential. So hopefully, the research starts to give better support to it, so we can kind of get back on top of that and help the athletes. And I think also the next step is like even just a regular population, just the anti-aging kind of community. People are just trying to live healthier for longer and delay that joint replacement surgery, because it is, like you kind of alluded to, it's a major deal getting a knee or hip replaced. And the older you get, the harder the recovery is.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, stem cell is still very much utilized in the United States. So I have a lot of patients that live in the States to get this.
Yeah.
But it's, of course, all dependent on affordability.
Yeah, true enough. Let's shift gears into the orthotics world. And my own kind of tastes or thoughts on the orthotics world is a little bit over the map, but I feel like they're somewhat still overprescribed and or maybe misprescribed depending on the issue. And obviously there's a lot of like commercial factors kind of that play into that. But talk about the types of scenarios you think orthotic prescription is most useful or beneficial for.
Well, I'd have to agree with you that, you know, there's been studies that many prefabricated orthotics may be just as beneficial, you know, as custom foot orthotics.
Yeah.
I think that, I would look at a patient who may have biomechanical issues like high arches or low arches, as good as finus, and see if they, you know, have pain associated with this and is it relating to their pain or biomechanical issues.
Mm-hmm.
I'll often be more convinced to prescribe orthotics patients tell me if they, you know, use increased support through their footwear and they notice benefit. Then I'll often use foot orthotics more. If they tell me it doesn't matter what type of footwear they're using, you know, whether it's a $2 foot box or, you know, $200 stability shoes, then I probably would be less eager to prescribe foot orthotics, having their footwear first and then just making sure we've gone through a checklist of all other training methods for mechanical issues and muscular imbalances, etc.
Yeah, I guess there's cases too where just as a physician, you're completely disconnected from the whole next half of the story. So you can tell them about exercise, but if they're not following them, they're just going to continue to decline. So it's a tough call to make, I guess, that in certain depending on what's going on, right?
Well, I usually have good communication with the people that, you know, send patients to, whether it's orthotists or physiotherapists.
Right.
And so I really do try to, you know, have follow-up with patients.
Oh, that's good.
And certainly with orthotics, it's not just a, you know, here, go get these. You know, it's making sure that they're working well for them. Follow up is always done.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, just to have some responsibility for the things you prescribe, right?
Fair enough. Yeah. At the end of the day, I guess it's just really up to the patient to do the work, though, if it's a functional thing that needs to be resolved, right? You talked at the top about concussions, and there's documentaries that came out with this, and we're learning a lot more about the long-term impact of, you know, contact sports like hockey and football about concussion management. I feel like we're learning more, and I feel like we're hopefully heading in that direction and how to manage that. Have you seen a change in the frequency of concussions now that the sort of doctrine around it or the sort of people have become more aware of it, like in your practice, or is it this similar, or where does that look clinically at this point?
I would say for football and hockey, you know, I think concussions are still occurring with the high risk of the sports.
Yeah.
I do believe that more parents are being very thoughtful in whether they put their children in sports now.
Yeah.
The risk concussions, and some are switching over to, you know, other games like soccer, which still has risk of concussions.
Yeah, true.
And within my practice, I find that I'm probably seeing a little less of them, and I think it's because some patients are probably, you know, being directed to very specific concussion rehab centers where there's a very multidisciplinary approach. We're all often direct patients there after initial assessments, I think, so that they have a team working with them. You know, with concussion protocols.
Right. Fair enough. It's just a nasty, nasty thing to go through. I've known people that, like, it can even happen. I feel like it's happened even more casually now. There's people slipping on the ice. Maybe I'm just hearing more about it, but it's a nasty thing. I would never really want to go through chronic concussions. It's just, I've known enough people to go through it. It's nasty. Let's talk about, this is a tough question to answer probably, but I want to get your take on if there's like a commonality in some of the type of athletes that require attention. There's people that are obviously just genetically prone to injuries. There's some people that are maybe just not doing the work. Do you see commonalities? There's common threads, there's common body types. Do you connect the dots in certain people that are prone to injuries or maybe less prone to doing the right type of rehab with that kind of with injuries? What's your take on that?
patients that come to mind again is certainly people in high risk sports.
Yeah.
You know, going to be certainly more prone to injury because of what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Others, it's associated with overtraining, or some people, right. you know, really undertrain. You know, they really overtraining and they're much more susceptible to injury.
Right.
They're training improperly and just needing more education. People with hypermobile, you know, joints. Eating disorders, you know, they're.
I wouldn't even have thought of that, but yeah, that's for sure. If they're malnourished, that's wild. So that said, do you, prior to coming into the clinic, do you have like, if you had like a pre-list of things that you wish that athletes would do more of to prevent injuries, to be like, man, if you just did this, you wouldn't be in my office today. Do you have like a list of exercise or categories? Is it eating? Is it rest? Is it recovery? What's the kind of lowest hanging fruit you feel like most athletes could benefit most from to avoid or take a better stance in their prehab protocol?
It's probably to do with adequate nutrition, adequate sleep and rest. Young people, especially young athletes, it's hard to have those rest days. It's hard to push yourself. And I think those rest days are really necessary. I think the good nutritional education is really important as well. And then training methods, and certainly at the varsity level, they're really being well trained, I think, in those sports.
Yeah.
And they've got good exercise and strength and conditioning coaches with teams.
Right.
Same with Hockey Canada. You know, there was really much emphasis on, programs developed for the players, nutritional journals and sleep journals, and then always a check-in on you, on difficulties with any depression or anxiety, and having somebody associated with your team to be able to address those things as well.
Right. So essentially get yourself the right people and coaches around you to kind of help you through it. For the people that are maybe not in a team environment, they're still susceptible to that. Maybe, and you mentioned overtraining is an issue. What are the signs you tell people to look for in overtraining? How do we know if we're getting the dose right with how much exercise and training we're doing?
Well, again, injury. The physicians very frequently, when they have more off time than they do have performance time. And people are sometimes, when I explain that to them, you can do this, you can not follow certain principles to return to sport, but you may risk injury, and that's going to happen sitting on the bench again. And so when people realize if you can modify your training, still have some similar outcomes, so that you can be active every day or 5 days a week, and not have to be out for most of the time with stress fractures or overuse injuries.
Yeah. It blows my mind how many high level athletes are maybe underusing the active recovery piece, or misusing that maybe, where it's just virtually no impact. You're just getting the heart rate beating a little bit, just getting some blood flowing. What are the types of things you recommend people to do as for an active recovery piece?
We'll talk about in older population, we'll be looking at, just walking. We'll look at stretching programs, block, yoga, Tai Chi, for instance.
Yeah.
And it's just a change, and emphasizing, especially stretching, which most people don't do enough of.
Right.
And it's still, these can be very, intensive workouts for some people who have never done a 60-minute core session, and so it's just a different way to use your body. And, and I think even, for instance, with the running population about 15 years ago, integrating running with yoga became very popular.
Which is great.
It's really hard to integrate different activities now for you to be active and to reduce your risk of injury.
Yeah, I love seeing that, because I feel like there's just it might be getting a little better, but I feel like in these different disciplines of fitness, everyone's they're so it's almost cult-like. If you're a runner, you just run, or if you're a bodybuilder, that's your thing. Or if you're just a CrossFitter, then everyone's beating heads and thinking their method is the best. But complementary pieces like that are amazing for developing everything that you're not developing with what you already have. So I hopefully we kind of head more in that direction. And on that note, I'm curious to know. So we talked a little bit about kind of the evolving technology, stem cell, PRP. I'm curious to know, where you see the sports medicine industry heading in the next 5 to 10 years in terms of technology and the types of techniques that are available to people.
One of the areas that is really kind of Stanford is wearables, you know, okay. So everybody's, I mean, there's certainly used in diabetes management, mm-hmm. and it's becoming well for training methods as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's an area
continuous glucose monitors that.
Yeah, for diabetes, yes.
Yeah.
But for athletes, you know, it's about performance and getting feedback from your coaches, just like we, you know, gave with his name.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I'm just thinking of wearables, and so we can monitor people's training programs, we can monitor their fitness. And Stanford really has had been leading the way with a lot of the research studies there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Cool. Patty, I'm curious to get I know you've been really active and really involved with sports. I'm curious to know, and we're also kind of at the tail end of a pandemic and, you know, priorities can kind of be out of whack. If in the health and fitness and wellness and longevity realm, what is at the top of your list of priorities right now? What do your habits look like around that?
My personal habits?
Mm-hmm.
I think that for me, it's doing things in moderation. Variety of activities that I do just to maintain my fitness. I've learned through many years of sleep deprivation to really value my sleep now,
mm-hmm.
and my recovery. And nutrition is always a really important part of everything I do as well.
Mm-hmm.
So those are, I try to do something every day, whether it's, low intensity, high intensity. And mm-hmm. it's a good way for me to have a good life balance.
Right.
And I don't know, I've done it for most of my life. So it's just something that's easy to continue.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Patty, this has been a fantastic chat. I really appreciate the time. What's the best place for people to learn more about your services?
There is information on the Wellington Ortho and Rehab website.
Okay.
I'm on Twitter at HockeyDoc, which is HCKYDOC.
Okay.
I guess I'll have to get active in social media because I certainly don't give you enough of it.
Fair enough. Well, we'll link to all your goodies in the show notes. And again, appreciate the time. It was great catching up.
Okay. Thanks very much.
All right. Well, thanks for tuning in for this episode of Healthspan Academy, guys. We'll see you next time. Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Thank you so much for supporting this channel. This has been a fun project. We are growing in viewership every single week, and we obviously couldn't do that without you. So thank you for continuing to tune in. I really hope you're getting value out of the programming and the content. Just wanted to give you a heads up. I've been working on a book on health and longevity the last couple of years. Been collaborating with my colleague, Dr. Dan Vitale, who's an expert in the field as well. And we've basically just kind of summarized the literature, some of the techniques that we found really useful in the world of biohacking, what our exercise regimen looks like, what's, cardio type stuff is going to help us live longer and healthier, mobility work, nutrition. We've covered the whole spectrum, everything that you can basically be in control of in your health and fitness kind of moving forward to help you live as healthily as possible for as long as possible. And it's available free for download. So if you click on the YouTube banner, you'll see a link to download the blueprint. It's also on our Instagram profile or on the website. You can click on fivepillarmethod.com/optimize to get your free copy of the book. And I hope you enjoy it. Hope you're keeping well. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.